Were you sober when you brought up the topics?
Oh. Time to corral these savages. Okay, folks, welcome to another edition of the Nomite Podcast. I'm Mitch Maxine. Any comments or questions to my personal Facebook page, the Nomite Podcast Facebook page, or an email to nomitepodcast2021@gmail.com. We got a full house tonight. Holy crap. Claude, welcome back.
Thank you. Glad to be back.
I have a hard time believing that's your real voice. It's I hear it twice a week in class.
Hello. It's very deep and very rich. Hello.
Too. How you doing,
Are you
Claude?
Flirting with like me the rest now, of us?
Sure.
Someone thinks well of themselves. All right, Rick, how you doing?
Not bad. Good to be back. This should be an interesting night tonight. We're all sort of making fun of the points, but this should be interesting.
We only make fun of that which we don't understand. I get it. Bob, welcome back.
I was... thanks. researching a topic on dark matter and its implications in the origins of the universe, but then you came across with this email and I thought, what the fuck? What do I care about that? I gotta talk about martial arts with Mitch and these guys. So here I am.
Well, I don't even know what to say. Lenny, how you doing, brother?
Good evening, all. Good to have Claude back. He's definitely he's almost like the soothing voice of late night radio. And Bob,
is
that wasn't
voice
sarcasm.
You revere?
But no, and you know, I know we've all been, the listeners won't know, we've all been like ripping the living piss out of topics, and I think it's because they're going to make us think really hard tonight. It's not simple, and it's one that's going to challenge us. So it should be an interesting night.
God forbid that we should make you think.
Yeah, exactly.
I'm feeling triggered now because you're slagging my Irishness.
go find a safe space.
Good to be here.
And Darren, welcome back, brother. What's going on?
My car was broken into last week, and I lost my phone and my laptop, my wallet, my ID, and money, and all kinds of stuff. So,
oh, shit.
That's where.
Jesus Christ!
It was in my secure underground parking lot with CCTV footage and everything, and they still managed to get everything, and the cops are just going around going... Duh.
The local constabulary are baffled. I'm sure they're throwing... I'm sure they're throwing all their resources behind it.
But other than that, I'm happy to be here. And I'm ready to delve into these topics. Hit me up.
Okay, folks. First of all, before we get to the topics, I want to spend a second and congratulate myself on the title of these talking points. The title is Who Watches the Watchers? And I already told Bob what the cultural significance of that phrase is. Does anybody else know?
I forget.
We'll include Bob, too.
Yeah,
It is. See, it is. It's a title of one of the Star Trek episodes, Who Watches the Watchers. Yeah. Anyway, I thought it was... Oh, look at Rick going, yeah, like he knew.
It's also from NCIS.
Really?
Yeah, one of Leroy Jethro Gibbs' rules. Always watch the Watchers.
Always watch the Watchers.
Okay, I hear... Okay. See, there's Rick in the background again saying shit like he knows what's going on. God damn it.
I'm clicking his pen.
I can know everything after it's said.
Okay, folks, I'm going to tell you what inspired these talking points before we get to them. There was a seminar this past weekend in the advertising for this particular seminar. It said, this individual is running a seminar on this day and this time, and it costs this much, and that was it. There was absolutely no description or clue as to what was going to be taught at the seminar. The notion was just that this individual was teaching the seminar, and that should be enough to get people to flock to the seminar. And I had a real issue with that. I tend to look at the martial arts as a collective of ideas more than I look at it as a collective of people. It's one of the reasons I don't want titles on the podcast. I don't want individuals to overshadow the concepts that are so near and dear to my heart in the martial arts. So that was the inspiration for these talking points. So as I do every time we do one of these podcasts, I'm going to go off the talking points to start. Am I making too much out of this? Am I making too much out of the fact that there was a seminar and the notion behind the seminar or behind the marketing for the seminar was this person's running it and that should be enough to entice people to go to it? What do you think? Claude?
The whole topic tonight of reverence or revering somebody, I don't buy into that with anybody. I think when we talk about revering somebody, I think it almost sounds cultish. To me, revering somebody is a post-mortem thing. As far as somebody throwing their name out there and going to it just because it's their name, there are very few martial artists that I would ever just go to because of a name. Might be starstruck if it was Jean-Claude Van Damme years ago, but I agree with you, Mitch. You don't just come out and say we're having a seminar. You really do need to talk about what it's about. In saying that, later on, when I was with the Botokukai system, I've got a really great example of reverence with a person that was still alive. But anyway, my point on that one is I agree completely. You need to know why you're going, and just because it's a name, there's a lot of people that don't know that name.
Rick, what do you think?
Well, what he was saying about reverence, I think that's a big difference between reverence and respect. And as far as the actual seminar, I think people were going to it out of respect and not reverence. That's my personal take on it.
Okay, but let me just talk to that point for a second. It was not an inexpensive seminar.
No.
And I'm not sure that respect for the individual running the seminar is reason enough for me to want to go and spend that much money on a seminar. I want to know what I'm going to be learning. I want to know the content of what I'm going to spend 2 or 2.5 hours training in for that money before I'm willing to say, yes, I'll go to that seminar. Is that unreasonable, Rick? Do you think that it's okay or reasonable for someone to head up a seminar and expect people to attend based solely on the individual who's running the seminar and exclusive of what they're going to be teaching?
Well, part of it depends on who set it up and how it was set up and who's getting the profit from it.
Well, no one's going to tell you any of that.
I know. I have my ideas on that myself, but anyway.
Okay, Rick effectively dodged that question. Lenny, what do you think?
Yep.
I'm coming at it from a little bit of a different perspective for you guys. So my first question to you on that is, how was it marketed? Was it just a sentence, this is a seminar with this guy? Was there any photos on it, photo presentation to entice you, or any indication? Or what way was it presented?
It was presented as a Facebook event. There was a picture of the individual who would be running the seminar.
Okay.
And it said, hey, this individual is running the seminar at this location at this time. Here's the cost. You get a little bit of a meal, and there's a question and answer with the individual. So that was it. No, that was honestly it. There was nothing else about the nothing about what mattered to me, which would be the content of the seminar.
Yeah, absolutely.
It was all about, hey, this person will be running the seminar.
Yeah. It's interesting you say that, because I actually was involved in a similar scenario about 7 or 8 years ago when word went around in our own circles here of somebody who was taking a seminar. And something similar, we were told this individual was coming from San Diego or somewhere like this, and he was going to put on 4 nights of 2 hours each and 1 Saturday afternoon of 6 hours, and why don't we all come along and attend? And we actually, a gang from my own dojo, attended out of respect for a couple of guys that we knew who had invited us to go. And when we arrived, the first hour was nonsensical stuff. Boy, apparently the star of the show was having his meal and was 2 miles away and decided to let his subordinates get things up and running, which was mind-numbing stuff of how your toe was in the wrong position, basically. In, you know, and after the first night, we spent $40 each of that and saw the guy himself for 20 minutes. And he asked us to pay up for the rest of the weekend for the Saturday in advance and wanted something like $400 or $500 off us. And we all went, no, not happening. Absolutely what you're saying, to just attend and revere somebody. I don't know if we were revering this guy. I think we went out of curiosity and loyalty to the individual who invited us. You shouldn't feel obliged or shouldn't feel drawn to something if, first of all, it has no interest to you, and secondly, you're just going because of someone's reputation. Absolutely.
Okay, now, Bob, hold your ground for a second. I do have another question, but I want to get to everybody first, and then we'll go around again, because I do have a question that leverages off what Lenny just asked. So, Darren, what do you think of all this?
A bit of a big deal about it that's not necessary. Because if you take, I agree kind of what Claude said, if back in the day if it was Claude Van Damme, I don't really care what he's teaching, you're just going to go watch it. So I think that's part of the reverence that you were saying. So if somebody, like I went to seminars, back in the day they didn't really tell you what they were doing. Like if Benny Arcides was doing a seminar, you just went because you assumed that he would teach you something that you didn't know. So that's one aspect. That once you've been in the martial arts for 40 years and there's a karate guy doing a seminar, of course you're going to want to know what he's teaching, because are you just going to go in there and he's going to teach something that you already know, or you feel that he doesn't have anything to teach you in that regard? So it would depend on who it is that's doing the seminar. And then part of the reverence thing, if you're just going up through the ranks and you know that guy from tournaments or whoever he is, and you thought, geez, I know I can learn from that, I'll go to the seminar. So you're putting yourself in a place where you've been doing it forever, and this guy might not have anything to teach you, therefore you're looking for specifics. But not everybody needs specifics. And the other thing is, there was a big thing on the radio the other day, who is it, Taylor Swift or somebody's playing a concert in Dublin, and everybody's flipping out because the tickets are so expensive.
Oh, yeah.
And they were asking people what they thought, why was everything so expensive in Dublin for concerts? And someone said, look, if you don't like Taylor Swift, don't go. If you think the tickets are too expensive, don't pay them. If you like her that much, then pay it. So that's kind of where I'm coming from the seminar. Right. If you like the guy and you think he has something to teach you, it doesn't really matter what he's teaching. You kind of take the risk and go there and assume you're going to learn something.
First of all, I agree with a lot of what Darren just said. My first question is, we've all been around the martial arts thing, circle, a number of times. What would we do if we decided to put on a seminar, and how would we advertise it? That's one question. Secondly, Darren's absolutely right. If you don't know much about the martial arts and you're kind of a beginner or orange belt or blue, the name will have an effect, and maybe should, just to see what's going on out there. I went to Darren brought up a Benny Arquita's seminar. Yeah, I went to one, and I went to a Bill Superfoot Wallace because of the name. And yeah, I did get something out of it, because to Mitch's point, probably because I knew what they were going to be talking about. It's what they're famous for. And that being said, I want to ask Lenny, if George Dillman was in your area and put on a seminar, would you go? And I'm being serious. Would you go?
Do you know what? Purely because I'd want to be cynical and nonsensical. Yeah,
right.
But the difference is, and suppose it's probably different for me in this respect, I've seen what he peddles on social media and YouTube channels. So I suppose I would have had a little bit of a head start of what to expect. Whereas I suppose in what Mitch is bringing up, if I'm not wrong, is nobody knew. Well, I wouldn't know what to expect, because I don't know this individual. Maybe you guys would have known what to expect.
What this whole thing comes down to is my concern when the individuals who practice the martial arts start to take precedence over the martial art itself. When personalities and names start to be bigger than what it is they teach and what it is they profess, I think that's an extremely dangerous, and to use, I believe it was Claude's phrase, I think it's a cultish perspective, and it concerns me greatly. I think there's already too much of that in the martial arts.
Sorry, if you were to, what if in advertised in your area was like a mixed martial arts seminar being given by, say, Joe Rogan? What does that throw into the mix? Because the expertise of the person who's leading this seminar makes a big deal of difference, right?
But not it kind of does. But I can't imagine any seminar I would want to go to simply because this person is leading it. Because I want to know what am I going to spend my time doing. Like, I've said it in past podcasts, the older I get, the pickier I become about what I want to spend my time and subsequently my money on what I want to train on. I'm getting very picky about that. So,
but hang on, George St. Pierre is coming to Peterborough to run a seminar, and he's not telling you what it's about. Wouldn't you go?
No. I wouldn't. I wouldn't go. I'm sorry, I wouldn't. And I wouldn't go almost on principle. I want to know what I'm going to be taught. Okay, let me ask you this. I don't care who said that they would go to see George St. Pierre. Darren.
Oh, I would.
Darren, who's your favorite actor?
I don't know if I have one, to be honest with you.
All right. Okay. There must be an actor you like. Imagine that person, okay? If you saw an ad that said, let's pretend, I know it's not, but let's pretend it's Tom Hanks, okay? You love Tom Hanks. And you saw an ad and it said, Tom Hanks has a new movie coming out on October 1st. I'm not going to tell you the name or what it's about, but Tom Hanks is in it. Would you go see that movie?
Who's your favorite actor?
What a marketing ploy. Yeah, everybody would.
I think that's where the thing is.
I wouldn't. but that's my point. I think I'm floating this boat alone. I would not go to see a movie just because someone's in it. I would not buy
it. Before COVID, it got messed up for COVID, so we never got to go. But Michael Bisping was having a question and answer session, and the tickets were like they were enough.
I remember that.
Like
we were
40
to go,
or 50 bucks or something like that. Never mind.
Who's Michael Bisping?
So
he's an MMA.
We were in there, and I wanted to go because I think he's funny, and I didn't know what the topics were going to be, what the people's questions. It wasn't a seminar; it was just a question and answer. And I asked Lenny, "Did he want to go?" He said, "Sure." So we bought the tickets, and we ended up getting canceled because of COVID, and they never rescheduled. But that was just like, it was a guy that seems interesting. So especially if it's one of your favorite fighters or favorite actors, yeah, go ahead. Like, what do you got to lose? $20? Like, Jesus.
Okay. I'm gonna interject here.
What if
it's a seminar being run not by Tom Hanks? What if it's somebody, a movie star who's going to talk, but it's not somebody who's good?
Well, then I wouldn't go.
Billy Baldwin is going to give a talk about his latest movie.
That's different.
You should go.
All right. Let's put it this way, Mitch. Jerry Ryan, 7 of 9, is coming to Peter. All she's doing is she's going to sit up on stage and talk. Would you go?
Not even to talk.
But it's a perspective. I think on that seminar, you're going way overboard, man. Way overboard. But anyway,
maybe. But that's one of the reasons I want to talk about this. This whole thing is a big level set for me. I don't understand. I guess I'm alone in this. I don't understand the draw of the individual. Now, look, I'm not saying that there aren't people to whom I would go to a question and answer with, because maybe I'm curious about what they think about certain things and all that sort of stuff. My concern is when the individual becomes more important than the content. That's my concern. Look, my favorite actor is what the hell's his name? Paul Giamatti. Oh, okay. Love him.
There you go.
I would never go to see a movie just because he's in it. That makes no sense to me. I want to be engaged by the content. The person personifies the content. But what if that particular content isn't content that interests me?
But knowing he was in the movie would interest you in the movie enough to find out what it was about.
It would. Yes.
The martial arts. Yeah. The martial arts yeah. is different. If there was somebody you really admired in the martial arts, would you not make an exception for that?
I don't know, man.
If Bruce Lee was alive and decided to come to Canada and has never been to Canada and is going to do a Q&A, would you go?
Okay, wait. Are we talking a Q&A or are we talking about a seminar? Because
doesn't matter.
It does matter. Would I go to a seminar if I didn't know what it was about? Nope. Would I go to a Q&A? Maybe. Because I might get an opportunity to interact with them and talk to them.
Surely a seminar can turn into Q&A very easily.
No. Is it a Q&A or is it a seminar? Well, one's just the same as the other. No, it's not. They're completely different animals.
You're still getting the same person.
Yes, exactly my point.
I find it hard to believe, Mitch, that there isn't anybody that you would want to go see just because it's them in the martial arts.
I think that's going to add to going up and getting somebody's autograph.
It's me. You must. Maybe they don't have that perspective.
Hold on. Wait. Hang on, Darren. Lenny, finish what you were saying.
You know, it's maybe that's your point of view that they're sitting there going, "Hey, come because it's me." Maybe they're sitting there going, "Come along. I'd love to share my experiences with you, whatever." But you're the one that goes, "Ah, fuck him." You know, I'm not going just because he thinks he's.
Wait, okay, I want to clarify something here. I'm not making any judgments, and I know I've sounded like I am, but I'm honestly not making any judgments on the character of any of the people who are involved in this sort of thing. I'm not saying I'll leave it at that. What I am saying is I do not understand or get behind the notion of going and spending hours of my time, not to mention money, because of the person or the reputation. That doesn't make sense to me. And to answer your question, Bob, I can't think of anybody in the martial arts that I would go to a two-hour seminar for simply because it's them. I want to know what are we going to be spending this time learning? Because maybe what they're going to be teaching isn't something that interests me, even if it is them teaching it.
Okay, come on. What's his name? Koga is coming to Toronto. He pretend he's not dead. Koga's coming to Toronto.
Okay.
You'd go. Come on.
Uh-oh.
Fuck.
You know, I think, Mitch, it's just like you seem to.
I hate rethinking
negative
stuff.
Thing, but what do you make of people that go up and get asked for somebody's autograph? Like people just. I'm not saying a judge thing. You obviously wouldn't. I don't bother asking for it.
You just said, "What do I think of?" That's asking me to judge.
The thought on that, like you're like, "I'm not judging this." Mitch, I'm not saying you're judging anything. I'm just saying, what in your opinion would you walk up and get someone's autograph?
Mitch, tell the story of the Batman guy.
Okay, but before I tell the story, I want to preface it by saying that was more than 10 years ago, and if you ask me that question now, I would not go up.
Growing up and do have an appreciation for people. Yes. And don't need to know exactly what's going to take place every minute of a seminar.
Yes, but like I said, I'm not commenting on anybody who did go. I'm not even commenting on the guy who ran the seminar. I'm saying the notion of the individual over the art is a bad thing. And Rick's condescending laughter makes me want to go to him next. Go ahead, Rick.
Yeah. You keep saying this seminar, because they didn't say what he was going to teach, you wouldn't go to it. That's fine. That's you. That's your thing.
Right.
The gentleman in question has been teaching for 50 or 60 years. He has run a club for 40 or 50 years. He's no longer running a club. And he was going to have a seminar. And the seminar would be just like a class. That's all it would be. I've been to his classes before. And so you don't really learn anything that much new, maybe a different viewpoint. And that's all you and I would probably get had we gone to that particular seminar. Right. But any other student of anybody that actually went through his ranks is looking at him because he is the head of a lot of different ranks, or was the head of a lot of different clubs, that they all looked up to him. They all respected him.
They're wrong to look up to him is part of Mitch's point.
That's what I'm saying. But it's also part of the martial arts.
Hang on a sec. First of all, anybody can look up to anybody they want. They're more than welcome to, and Godspeed. I worry when respecting somebody bleeds over into blind reverence. And that seems to be what I'm seeing more and more of. And I think that's incredibly unhealthy. Some of the people I've respected the most in the martial arts in my early martial arts career, I respect less now because their perspective has shifted into a direction that I don't agree with. I don't think that these things are good things. I don't think the things that they espouse as good in the martial arts by their words and their deeds, I don't agree with that anymore. And because of that, I have a hard time respecting these individuals anymore.
So you're against cultism on principle, and is that what it comes down to?
I hesitate to blossom it out into that broad generality. I am against people who revere individuals over what those individuals stand for. Claude, say something. Or Rick, say something.
Sorry. I think you're getting a little bit overboard with the revere thing. Respect is one thing. But then again, you are also speaking as a person who has been in the martial arts for 45 years, 40 years, whatever, right? That's a long time. So anybody that hasn't been, I mean, you're coming up 5, 10, 15 years, you're still learning a lot of different stuff. And you want different inputs from different people. So
no.
The respect is
no.
The respect,
wait, hang on.
Yes, you do.
Wait, hang on. Bob.
What do you mean, no, Bob?
Wait.
It's more than that.
Go ahead. Go.
Naive students blindly look to people. And we can't, for the most part, we can't blame them for that, but we got to call them on it. Especially when they ought to know better, when they're getting up in the ranks, and they've been around, and they still pretend to revere people that really don't deserve that reverence. This is where I think Mitch is trying to drill down, and this is where I completely agree.
Claude, anything to add to this?
The word reverence, I'm still struggling with. I don't know if I have ever revered anybody in the martial arts. There are people that I genuinely respect, and I respect them a lot. But reverence just puts them on a pedestal that I struggle with. I was telling Rick this story at the dojo last night. Have any of you ever heard of of Richard Kim?
Mm-hmm.
He was head of Botokakai worldwide. He started Botokakai back in the, I believe it was the middle 70s. He did train with some very, very reputable black belts in Japan before the Second World War. He brought karate to Hawaii and then moved it into the rest of the United States. And he had a vision of creating a type of martial arts system that didn't just stay with one, but incorporated many different styles and embraced many different styles. He would hold seminars in the summer. Some of them were two weeks long. These seminars were well organized. He did not run everything, but you knew that you were probably going to learn a kata, a weapons kata, an open hand kata, and every morning he would lead Tai Chi. Now, where I go with the reverence with him is he's probably the only person that was alive that I almost felt like it was a cult. He was very, very knowledgeable. Every evening he would have a seminar, and his seminars were sometimes fun to listen to. But he started talking about everyday living and how you should handle your money and how you should live your life, which from a martial arts perspective, I didn't know that that was any of his business and what made him an expert in that way. But what was really bizarre is if we were, there would be 300-400 people at these seminars. And we'd go out for dinner, and I would see him And he is in the center, surrounded by seven or eight black belts. It was almost like they were his bodyguard. And reverence is top of the mind when people talked about him when he was alive. He died in the late 90s, and it's still there. So, but he is somebody that I did not revere him. I respected him, but I did not revere him, but many, many people did. And then I go to another end where we touched on this one, where are there people in the martial arts that revere themselves and expect you to? And I did train with one fellow for far longer than I probably should have. But he held himself on this pedestal because he's been teaching karate for so many years. But I think I had heard you mention this point before. He did not have the ability to put himself on that kind of a pedestal. So he was somebody that revered himself and expected everybody else to. And then Richard Kim, people just simply did revere him. It was almost cultish.
Okay, but the point being... I want to go around the table. There, we all have martial artists.
Me.
Bob, would you like to say something?
No, let me just
put this out there. What if you wanted to run a seminar? How would you put yourself forward as the leader of this thing? This is ridiculous. I'm a guy. I've done this. I think I have something to teach, and here's what I might be able to teach. Maybe come to my thing. That's kind of the tone of what I would fucking put on my fucking Facebook, whatever it is.
The thing is, I have to agree with Bob. I have a lot more regard for a seminar where it says, hey, we're running a seminar on this day, this time, here's how much, here are the things we're going to be covering. I care less about who's running it than I do about what's being taught. And this is the part of the overall concern that I have. Why is it becoming more and more commonplace to bow down to the individual as opposed to the ideals for which that individual stands or the content of what they teach? That's my bigger concern.
This brings into question the whole ego thing. How many people who call themselves masters do we know? Do we know in our own area who want people to kiss their asses? They're so used to people kissing their asses that they expect it, and they get people who kiss their asses, and that's just taking advantage of naive students. And That's a whole fucking thing that you're opening. What is it? What do you open?
A can of worms.
Box.
No, or a Pandora's box. Anyway, that's more elegant.
I didn't mean to explode there, but cripes.
Okay, let's go around the table one time. Last comments on this whole notion of seminars based on who's teaching it as opposed to what's being taught. Then we'll get to the actual talking points. Claude, in 10,000 words or less, what do you think?
Unless it's a celebrity that you want to go just to meet that celebrity or see what that celebrity has to say, I agree with you, Mitch, that I would rather know what the seminar is about. Doesn't matter who the person is.
Rick.
It depends on what the seminar is and who puts it on. I might go, I might not. It's a respect thing for me. It's not a reverence, but I do respect certain peoples, and I will go to their seminar just because of who they are sometimes and for no other reason.
Lenny.
I'm a nosy bastard, so I'd probably just want to go to see what it's all about.
I'm a nosy bastard. The fuck are you people doing in here?
No, I'm curious.
That's great.
I'm quirkily curious.
No, I agree with Richie. Like, it's just some, like, I understand where you're coming from, and I'd like to know what the seminar is about, but there would be certain people that I'd be happy enough just to go and hope for the best. And if they turned out to suck, then okay, you spread that around and you go, here, don't go to this dude's seminar because it's terrible and he doesn't tell you what it is. But if you get something out of it, then it's worthwhile. But I know that simple question of would you go or not isn't really what you're getting at with, as you said, you're worried about it becoming more than this. But I just don't think I'd bother my whole worrying about that. I'd be just like, look, there's a seminar going, I either go or I don't. I'm not going to worry about the bigger picture, and is this going to be something that's going to continue happening, and is martial arts going to be ruined from it? No, just take it as a day-by-day thing. This one, okay, you don't like. Maybe the next one you will. Let's not worry about it getting out of hand.
I have two words for you there, Darren, and seminars.
I go. Just for the spectacle.
Bob, any last comments on this particular topic?
Well, I'm pretty much retired, so I don't really care about any of this, really. But the only seminars I would go to now, well, if Lenny or Darren gave one in my area and it was free, I'd
just
probably
out of reverence.
Just to be a spectator.
He couldn't afford me.
But any seminar I would really go to would be in any something exotic and foreign that I've never really trained in, just for curiosity. So, this whole notion of because who it is giving it is foreign to me. Has been foreign to me for the last 30 years, and I'm glad of it.
Just my own last comments before we go on. I get where Darren's coming from, and Darren's one of the most laid-back, sort of zen-ish guys about all this sort of stuff. It's like, oh, you guys do you, and I'll do me, and everybody's fine, and everybody does their own thing, and it's all cool. And I admire that perspective, and in a lot of ways, I wish I could adopt it. But I see a slow degeneration over time of the martial art that I love so much. And one thing I've learned running a business with Bob is that, and my ex-wife, I don't leave her out, we run the business together. But one thing I've learned is success is not overnight, it's incremental, it's piece by piece. And the degeneration of something is the same thing. It's done piece by piece. It's not one big thing that causes something to fall from grace. And that's why I look at all of these little topics that we talk about, including this one, as one more little bit of chipping away at the foundation of this martial art. Do I lay awake at night thinking about this stuff? No. I mean, I did last night because we had a podcast today. So, yeah, I was thinking about it. But overall, I just see all these little tiny things individually chipping away at that foundation, and it inspires me to want to talk about it, okay? So I don't want anyone to think, oh my God, my whole life has come to a standstill because of this podcast topic, but I do think it's something worth talking about. Okay, anyway.
We almost got a fucking hour out of it.
Let's go on to the next talking point. This is, it's... I know, right?
Oh, it was worth talking about, obviously.
We've talked in the past about the veterans, and I think we can all put ourselves in that category, veteran just being defined as someone who's been doing something for a while, as being the caretaker of the martial arts, that we're just safeguarding the things that we train in and teach for the next generation. I've got some interesting things to say about that. I've got a couple of things to say about it, but I'm curious what you folks think about that statement, that we're just caretakers passing it on. Len, I'm going to start with you first, only because I'm pretty sure I know what you're going to say. Go.
What do you think you're going to say?
Oh, I don't want to steal your thunder. Go ahead.
Yeah, you say it and he'll tell you if he was right. Well,
Jesus Christ, here's what I think about it.
And
I know, right?
Wow, I'm back in medieval Ireland here.
All right. Jesus, my Irish sucks. Go ahead, Luke.
That's the first true thing you've said tonight.
I beg to differ.
I've muted Lenny. I'm gonna give him about 20 seconds, and then we'll bring him back. All right. Hi, Lenny.
Yeah, I'm here.
There he is. He showed me, goddammit.
Bueller. I know, I've seen you do, Carter. I told you that last week.
Len, what do you think about this whole notion of being a caretaker?
We didn't create martial arts. They were created a long time before us. I know they've evolved. And I suppose every time we decide to take a class, it's in our hands, whether we see something that we want to change. And I know we just... Bob has been very vocal in his opposition to this in the past is saying if you change stuff, then you're not teaching what you profess to have learned, or you're not teaching the style you profess to have learned. So, yes, we are caretaker, but there's good caretakers and there's bad caretakers, and I suppose it reflects on us as the kind of upbringing we've had in the martial arts world and the standards we were held to and the standards we expect to hold on to, whether we do something for the detriment or the good of it. So I firmly believe, yeah, look, any of us could be gone next week. The martial art is still there. Someone else is going to take it on, or it's going to continue. And we're nothing but just the key holder for the next guy, in my opinion.
Claude, what do you think?
I believe that you can't not be a caretaker. We've all trained, so obviously some people are better than others. Some people have had better instructors than others. And we're all diving back into, whenever we're teaching somebody, the well that we learn from ourselves. So good or bad, whether your training was good or bad, you will be passing on to the next person, hopefully, the best you can with what you know. That's it.
That was succinct.
That just means that some of us are good caretakers and some of us are shitty caretakers.
No, but it just means that everybody has their own abilities and has their own teaching methodologies. Everybody is going to try to teach as best they can. Obviously, there'll always be some that are better than others.
No.
Yes?
I say again, that is almost a vacuous statement. You either try to be a good caretaker, if that's what you're in, want to do, or you don't. And from my perspective, look, Mitch, you remember one of the people in my martial arts life who I consider one of the best caretakers in your terms, in your definition of caretaker, was a guy named Frank Bear that we both have taken some classes under.
Mm-hmm.
What was that, 30 years ago? Who the fuck knows? But he preserved his style, which I really don't remember the name of, better than anyone I can ever think of trying to do. He passionately wanted to preserve the style as it was taught in the classical age. Now, don't pin me down here. It was a shitty style, and I would never want to practice that myself. But I had to take my hat off to that guy for his devotion to keeping the traditions alive. And if that's what you're trying to do, hats off to you. If you mean something else by caretaking, it almost becomes vacuous, because I could say, well, I'm caretaking my martial arts principles, whatever I decide I want to teach. Well, I'm caretaking for the next generation. It's not fair. Caretaking means preserving something. And look, that's another topic. It's a whole topic for another podcast episode.
Oh, no. No. No.
Yeah.
The thing is,
to preserve a style, that's a real choice. And if you're going to do it, you've got to do it. And if you don't, at least admit you're not.
The thing is, Bob brings up the most critical point about this particular talking point, which is the definition of what we mean by caretaker. Bob's definition is obviously to preserve the style in which you were weaned. I don't have that same definition. So let's keep going around the table. And if you want to throw your own definition of caretaker in there, please do.
Darren, from the same angle as Bob. That's what I thought you were looking for with regards to the definition. I mean, the concept in general, I think it's definitely valid, but it is, I'm not sure about the vacuous thing, but it definitely is a lot broader than just simply saying you're the caretaker of the martial arts. And I think, like, again, what Claude said, there's good instructors and bad instructors, so there's going to be good caretakers and bad caretakers. So just to say that a veteran is a caretaker, I think it's just so loosely thrown out there, it doesn't really have any validity in that kind of merit, or sorry, that sentence. So, if I mean, in this day and age, again, we're in a communication age, you can go on the internet and you can find someone that is a veteran and is a good caretaker and then just gravitate toward that. If it's just that we have to be a caretaker, no, we don't have to be anything. We're just there doing our thing. So if we want to learn more or learn from somebody else, we can. I don't think that we're caretaking anything. We can pass on what we know, but that's probably changed from what we started. As Bob was saying, that one instructor was kind of still holding on to the traditions, which I also respect, like whether they're good or bad or whether they work in society, it's irrelevant. He was taught that way. He's passionate about it. He wants to pass that on. I think that's great. Whether that's being a caretaker, I don't know. Whether it needs to be passed on, I don't know. It's such a broad concept. It's hard for me to say anything any more than what anybody else has. I don't really know where to go with it, to be honest with you.
Rick?
Caretakers is a relative term to how you mean it, what you told, who you're talking to, and everything else. Because you take even the kata that we do now.
Yes.
I mean, they have changed.
Yes.
Over the years. We have done different things. We've lightened stances, we've heavied stances, and I got an eye opener when we went to another club that actually the guys that ran that club trained with sensei under Soroka sensei. They have a club that was all affiliated together anyway, but we were there and they were there we were at their club, and we did, I think it was Lohai Show or Lohai Dai, or maybe it was, I don't know, one of them anyway, maybe that one or Tenshin. Anyway, we did the kata and they looked at us and went, oh, you're still doing it old style. And we're like, they don't do it that way anymore. You go to different clubs that train together, and the individuals that were teaching those students all train together. They all teach their students differently. So as far as being caretakers, it's yes, we are, but it's more like a keykeeper, and you're trying to pass on the traditions and things. And as we say, yeah, life changes, we change, and
that's kind of what I was trying to get at too.
Much, but
I got caught up. I got tongue tangled.
What springs to mind for me, and I hate to say this because I might be the only one here who did kendo for a while, but they, forgive me, but they are preserving to the best of their ability what that martial art is about. And I'm sure the reason is that it's not practical. It's completely in its own different world, and therefore they're free to preserve the traditions. Let's put it that way. And when it comes to karate or martial arts, other martial arts in general, they're not in their own world. They have to at least attempt to be practical. And that's where you don't feel the incentive to preserve what you don't like. You can discard it, which means that it evolves or devolves or at least changes according to every generation of sensei in front of the class, and they almost feel a duty, and it's almost right to feel a duty to change the techniques according to what you think would be better. It's such a difficult question. Who preserves the tradition? Who feels the freedom to change what they've inherited for what they take to be the betterment of the style? Cripes.
That's an incredibly salient point. If we separate out, call it practical versus non-practical, and by non-practical, I'll talk about kendo, I'll talk about aikido, I'll talk about judo even, because those martial arts are practiced in a vacuum. You don't strike in judo, you don't kick in judo. All you do in judo are those techniques. Karate seems to be much more free form because the point, or the celebrated point of karate, is to be able to defend yourself. And as soon as you make that claim, you broaden the scope of what you do, and anything that allows you to defend yourself more effectively gets sucked into the lexicon of what you do.
Yeah, this is important.
judo doesn't do that. Aikido doesn't do that. They don't care about what. You'll never get a judo instructor, maybe never, but I've never seen a judo club go, we'll teach you street self-defense. They're like, we'll teach you how to do judo in a judo environment. And it's much easier to caretake the traditions when you don't have to worry about whether or not it's practical. You know, because it's already as good as it can get, I think. It's an important distinction to make. In terms of karate, and I just want to answer this, I consider myself an extremely poor caretaker. I don't even think of myself as a caretaker. I think of myself as this rogue idiot over on the side who does what he does, and I'm so torn by this contradictory perspective. I love karate. It was my first martial arts love. I love it to this day. I spend a lot of time thinking about it. I spend a lot of time working out in it. And yet I'm still so, so very cynical about the people who train in it. And it's difficult for me to marry those two perspectives. So in terms of the question here, which is, are we caretakers of what we do? I'm going to say no, I'm not. I don't consider myself a caretaker, and even if I did, I'm certainly not a good one. I'm on the side. If someone, I just want to be apart from it all. I want to train, I want to work out. Do I care whether I pass on what I do to anybody else? Nope. I've been disappointed enough. The whole notion of lead by example is nonsensical and almost laughable. So my perspective on caretaking, I don't really give a crap, frankly.
I got to pull you on that.
Go ahead.
Have you sat on grade panels in the past and recently, and you've graded people?
I've sat on grading panels.
Yeah, and you've judged whether somebody's worthy to pass a grade or not.
Sure.
Okay, so surely by that notion, you are a caretaker of a standard that you're hoping they'll aspire to. And if they don't reach that, they're not passing the grade.
Nope, because most of the time, my perspective is that person didn't meet the standard. And I guess by that definition, sure, I caretake a standard by which I feel things should be done. Sure.
So maybe you are a caretaker, though you admit to not being one. But you are one of particular standards. And
if caretaker of standards of quality,
that's what I'm alluding to.
It gets back to the definition. By caretaker, I guess my definition includes. Oh well, and maybe here's a question. I'll tell you what. Let's take a break. It's time for the break anyway. Darren's got to pee. I know he doesn't even have to say it. But I've got a question about caretaking when we come back. All right, so folks, we're going to take a break for a couple of minutes, and we'll be right back. Okay, folks, we're back from the break. I just want to tie up this question that we had about caretaking of the martial arts. Maybe this is a singular perspective that only I have. God knows it wouldn't be the first time tonight that I'm the only one who thinks something. But when I hear the term caretaker, part of that definition includes a certain responsibility to pass something on. If you're caretaking something, not only are you taking care of it, but there's an implied responsibility to make an active effort to pass on that which you care for. Is that, how do you guys feel about that expansion of that definition? Is that reasonable? And if so, how do you pass that on? Darren?
Are you caretaking a specific tradition, art, methodology, philosophy, whatever? Are you trying to say, someone like Bruce Lee, for example, he took the principles and his whole goal was to continually expand and apply and learn. So once at the end, say just before his death, he was passing on his philosophies, but they weren't his philosophies when he first started out. So he wasn't necessarily caretaking what he had learned. He expanded his knowledge and pulled more. Do you know what I mean? So it's like a scientist. If you learn your basic science, say when you're a kid, that's definitely not what you're passing on when you're a veteran, because you've learned so much in science. So it's hard to say you're a caretaker of the tradition, because it would seem tradition, I would take that as more the philosophy, the morality, the code of ethics, and all that kind of thing. And definitely that's something you should hold dearly and definitely pass that on. So you're just not handing everybody a license to kill and just saying, here's some ways that you can hurt people, off you go. So there is that responsibility. But as far as the tradition, and even as I think it was Richie was saying that about, you know, katas change over the years, and you know, whether it's for practical reasons or just someone has a different interpretation of it, like the Bible or something. So it depends on what you're caretaking, I think. So I agree with what you're saying, but I think there is room for expansion or passing on further knowledge. So each person is a caretaker in their own right. So maybe they're taking what they think is worth holding on to.
Darren, I appreciate Bob. Darren, I appreciate everything you're saying, but do you consider yourself a caretaker?
Yes.
Of whatever, by whatever definition. And if so, how do you perceive living up to the responsibility of passing on whatever it is that you're caretaking? Your methodology?
You're kind of teaching with the way you've been taught and the way you think it should be taught, and kind of a blend of the two and moving forward. If you're having conversations with people, lots of times I'd be at a tournament. I always feel bad for people, because I remember going to tournaments as a kid. It was a massive tournament, and you're scared shit, and you're going in there and you're paying your money, and you lose your first fight, and that's it, you're out, and then the day continues on and you're not part of it. And so whenever I'm like in the ring or head reffing or whatever it is, I always feel the need to tell people something. So when you lose, give them something. Okay, you lost that fight, but here's why you lost. Here's how you can improve. If someone's doing a kata, I'll walk up to them afterward and say, that was really good. This is how you can improve. So I think it's, as you said, how you perceive it or how do you pass it on? That's just one example. Like, I hate to see, you know, you've got 30 competitors and 29 of them lose except for one. Are the 29 useless? No, and some of them might be useless, but they might have potential later. But you don't want them to walk away from that experience dejected. So it's like coming up to them and say, listen, we're all here for fun, we're all here to learn. If you lose, you're going to learn, and these are all the things. And I think that's part of the principles that you're trying to pass on, if that makes sense.
Yeah, absolutely. Bob, you wanted to say something.
Yeah, if you're a caretaker, to my mind, you're trying to preserve something. Now, beyond preserving, you know, motivation, how to really do your best at something, and really, show other people how to do their best. To my mind, caretaking in a martial arts style implies preserving something about it. The techniques of the style, right? Am I wrong?
No. To my mind, okay. To that, I have a different definition, but carry on, Bob.
To my mind, caretaking is preserving. And what what can we preserve? What are we talking about when we preserve something? And to my, well, you guys have stolen my thunder and wrecked it, so somebody else talk, and then I'll argue back.
Claude, what do you think?
I think that I'm at a bit of a disadvantage because I've moved so many times. I've never had my own dojo like you guys. And for me to say there is something for me to preserve, well, I'm a collection of quite a few different dojos I've trained in. They've mostly all been karate, but everybody has different emphasis. So for me, caretaking is just trying to pass on what I've learned to the best of my ability and working with whoever I am on.
No,
whatever.
No, I think that's a great point. See, that's my point. Oh, God damn it. No, preserving my point of view and passing on my point of view, that's...
when you've trained in different styles, how do you separate them? When you've trained in different styles, how do you separate them?
Oh, it's possible to separate them. Like, if that's... If the preservation of something is...
But which one do you preserve, as Claude was saying? If you're doing different clubs and different styles, or which one do you want to preserve?
Then preservation doesn't enter into it. Like,
but it does, in your definition.
No, it's an entirely different thing. I'm melding all these styles into my personality, and this is what I'm passing along, and that's not preservation. That's just...
So your definition means that I cannot preserve because my biggest problem training here is my muscle memory from training in other places for so long. And even though I realize I'm doing it after I've done it, my body just does it. So for me to say I am going to preserve just your system, it's impossible for me because my muscle memory
is... That's fine. I'm not saying preservation is a great thing. I'm not saying...
Okay, so I'll never be able to, in your definition, pass it on.
Sure. I don't care. I really don't care.
No, I think he's onto something here.
Why do you think I care? No. I mentioned in the last, before the break, I knew this guy who went all out to preserve the style. I have no time for that shit. I'm not out to preserve anything. I'm just doing my thing, just like all of us are. And it's just a matter of... what was the question? If we're out to preserve something, what is it? I don't care whether anybody preserves it.
Rick.
You have to... Like, we all try to keep our own... keep our traditions and the cut.
No, we don't all. We don't all. God's just after saying you go to different clubs and.
I know, we all do it differently. So you try to keep it the way you think it was, but it's not. It's probably changed for everybody. But if you want to try,
you tried to do it the same way, but you changed.
Then you're not preserving it.
Well, you do. Are you telling me that after 20 years of doing karate, you punch the same way you did when you were for a brown belt?
I'm saying that the less you do that, the less you're able to tell anybody you're caretaking anything. That's all I'm saying. Caretaking is priority or it isn't.
Is the question really, is caretaking important?
Well, that's the question.
Okay,
is it caretaking or is it preservation of an art?
That's the same thing in my mind.
Lenny, let's hear your thoughts, Len.
So I struggle with this one a bit because my style that I deal in has morphed a hell of a lot in recent years and even the last 20, 30 years. And I mean, I've sat here openly on previous podcasts up to a year ago and held my head in shame, ridiculed and laughed and castigated people who I professed people who profess to practice the same style that I do. And when I look at that and I look at what I was taught, and then it gives me a big dilemma of, okay, am I not doing the style that I profess to teach, or have these people just messed it up and it has become so popular and so easy that I am kind of some kind of soul crusader in the preservation of the original, or am I the one that's in the wrong? And this is where I get into a bit of a dilemma over it. And, you know,
who's the real caretaker here, right?
Yeah, that's exactly what's coming up. I was just going to say, am I a caretaker of standards I've set myself and what I was taught, or are they caretakers of what's truly the art? And am I just totally shooting in the dark here and yelling into an open field and not realizing that I'm the one that's wrong? So I guess what I'm saying is, from a personal standpoint, I like to think that I like to preserve and, I suppose, caretake, for the word, high standards, and would like to see that students that I bring through the system as I pass it on, that they would, you know, allude to the same. But I've already seen students of mine that have let standards slip, and I'm scratching my head going, okay. And at the end of the day, they choose their own path. And there are a few students that have trained me that would have been of exceptionally high standard have explored other arts and gone down different paths, and I'm watching the basics of what I taught them, what I feel suffer to the detriment, and I'm going, oh, okay, they're letting standards slip. Mm. So maybe I'm just grumped. Maybe I'm just this grumpy old man who has standards and doesn't like when they go elsewhere because I see them as slipping. And maybe I'm the one that's wrong. What I will say is I think I'm a caretaker of what I hold dear to be important in basic martial arts, depending, regardless of what style it is, be it a stance.
I gotta say again.
Yeah, go ahead, Bob. Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, to say I'm a caretaker of standards,
I don't think it is
an empty concept because okay, everybody.
I understand.
Everybody's.
Yeah.
No, I don't think it is either.
That's important to pass on. Otherwise, you're just some drill sergeant.
Everybody, we
spoke last week on ego and the term, you know, should be, you know, the term sensei, and I suppose the most recognized term for sensei is one who has been before. It doesn't say anything about keeping standards. It doesn't say anything about how good they were when they came before. So we're not talking
about the meaning of the word sensei.
No, I know, but someone who's sensei is supposed to be the one you look up to, and it's supposed to be the keeper of standards, or the one who imparts education on somebody else. So surely they go hand in glove.
Can I ask a question for, this would probably be for the Mitch, Bob, and Rick. Would you say that when you were training with Sensei Bell, he was a keeper of tradition?
No way.
Oh, God, you guys have never been all over the place. That's from what I've heard, he was a very good instructor as far as being able to teach uniquely each and every individual.
Yeah, great personality about teaching.
What I'm saying is, if you guys weren't even taught by somebody that was a caretaker, then how do you become a caretaker?
Depends on your definition of caretaker.
That's
sensei,
the whole point
I remember specifically four different ways of doing Nisei Shisho that we learned growing up. No, it's not, but hey, you know, it's the same kata, but there was slight differences in the way we did the kata.
When you're talking about...
It's a great kata. I love that kata.
Let's talk about whether that's good.
Are you a caretaker, or are you just teaching somebody else what you were taught? Because like when we were growing up through the ranks and everything, that was definitely tradition. No. You might have added stuff and you expand on stuff, but the whole caretaking didn't...
No, wait! No! Add stuff and expand on Nisei Shisho is changing the goddamn kata, and that's not preserving anything, and that's not being a caretaker.
Yeah, it is.
Oh.
He was still taking care of the traditions. I mean, a caretaker sweeps up and keeps things...
It depends on how much you're caretaking as well. Like, just the fact that you still do katas in a karate thing is a kind of caretaker. If you just wanted to have karate to be a military thing or a self-defense thing, you would eliminate kata. So the fact that you're still doing that, you're still caretaking the art to a certain degree.
To be taking care of something is to preserve it the way it was, and not to be changing it through your brain.
The thing is, I got to jump in. I absolutely respect Bob's perspective that his definition of caretaking includes or is almost exclusively about caretaking a particular way of doing things. This is the style.
Not changing it.
Right. I understand that. I don't share that definition. My definition of caretaking, and this is why I said before the break, I'm a lousy caretaker because I don't give a flying fuck about maintaining the style, because our style has been so, use the word bastardized, changed, amended, improved, evolved.
Devolved.
I don't care what phrase you use. It's changed over the years. So I think any one of us, certainly any of us from Jiuxin, who pretends to be a caretaker of that style, is fooling ourselves, because that style wasn't that style long before we darkened the doorstep of that dojo.
No, unless we sincerely inherited what we took from the style and sincerely passed it on to the best of our ability,
and
then
and
we're trying to do exactly that.
And fair enough, and I don't do that. I don't give a flying fuck about style. When I talk about, I really don't. When I talk about caretaking, I talk about, and this is this departs from Bob's definition. And everybody, if you listen real careful, you'll hear Bob's eyes roll into the back of his head when I say this. My notion of caretaking has nothing to do with how the techniques are done in terms of physicality, the direction the kick goes, the motion of the arms. It's more an ethic of how you perform when you're on the dojo floor. I like to think that I hold more dear than the individual techniques of the style. Is anybody still there?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. I'm still here.
Sorry, got awful quiet there for a second. Wait a second,
worry.
Let me finish.
I'll jump in real quick.
We're hanging on every word, Mitch.
Yeah, I'm sure. It's not so much, to me, it's not so much about how the techniques are done, although I do have my own perspectives on how I think they should be done. I'm more concerned with the workout ethic and the training ethic. And I see, it's tough for me. I don't, like I said, I don't think I'm a caretaker. I'm just a guy standing at the side who does what I do. And the thing I would like to pass on is the work ethic I have when I'm on the dojo. Do I care that someone does?
If you're, by caretaking, you mean taking care of your workout ethic.
Right. What's wrong with that?
Absolutely. That's fine. Okay. The conversation stops. You're absolutely right.
Nice. I love to hear that. The point being, but Bob's definition, look, we all have our own definition of caretaking, and that's what this whole question was about. Do you see yourself as a caretaker? What's your definition, and how do you pass that on? For me to answer that question, I don't see myself as much of a caretaker of style. I don't even try to push my own work ethic on the students anymore because it's just gotten so depressing and frustrating. So I've relegated myself to, I'm the guy in the corner who will work out, and when asked to teach, I'll teach. But at the end of the day, if you want to take from me what I have to offer, I'll happily offer it, but I am not going to try and waste my breath by passing it on. I think that's a self-defeating exercise. Did we miss anyone? Anyone got anything else they want to say? Bob?
I miss Lenny.
Thanks, Bob. I was about to give you the Oxford English Dictionary.
I just think when you're
actually no.
Go ahead.
A person employed to look after a building.
That's it.
But what's the philosophical definition of a building?
The North American definition of it is a person employed to look after people or animals. So that kind of more closer to the bone in my head.
Yeah,
exactly.
Yeah, I was
sorry, Darren, you were going to say something.
On the revered thing, what happens when the people who are revered shift the perspectives? I think you could, I know, but you could almost with what we've
been
talking
getting
about,
there. That's next.
Input caretaker in there. What happens when the people who are caretakers shift their perspective so that the ideas that made them caretakers in the first place change to the point where they're in conflict with or betrayal of the original? It fits in, kind of.
It does, and let me just speak to that real quick. I am exactly what that is, because I used to champion the cause of the style. I used to champion, you know, it was like, this is awesome and this is great and I want to pass it on and blah, blah, blah. But my perspective shifted. And my ideals that at that time might have qualified me to call myself a caretaker no longer do. I, as a matter of fact, my perspective now could absolutely be seen as betraying the notion of a caretaker. Not that I'm trying to
totally reprogrammed.
And that's the thing
you
get a different
perspective. Go ahead,
of things and different knowledge and stuff like that. And I think that's the same with what Claude was saying. If you train in different clubs and different styles, you gain a different knowledge of things. So your perspectives are going to change along the way.
But now let's segue into that talking point. Everybody's perspectives change as they train and as they gain more experience. Yes? We've all had people in our martial arts career that we have respected slash revered. I don't know about you folks, but I have certainly seen their perspective shift into a direction that I cannot respect and I cannot support. So this leads into that question. What do you do with that respect that you had for that individual when you watch their perspective shift away so far that you not only don't agree with them, but you might even describe them as a betrayal? Am I the only one who's experienced that?
Oh, man. Look, I just want to start from a level playing field. And I do this again. I keep bringing up the different martial arts that I've been involved in. And it's not really fair. And it's kind of pretentious. But in many of those, there's been no deviation from the style. It's every generation of teacher has taught the same thing over and over again. And again, it's not a self-defense oriented martial art.
Bob, in Aikido, the guys you trained in Aikido with, you would define them as true to their style and all that stuff, yeah?
Yep.
Did you ever see them graduate someone to a rank that, in your estimation, that person didn't deserve to have?
No, not at all. Never. And same as in Kendo. And
what about Judo?
Well, I've got reservations about our Judo ranks.
Okay.
But whatever.
But that's my point.
What are you getting at?
My point is, my martial arts history is replete with people that I respected greatly and then felt almost betrayed by because of some of the decisions they made in their training, in their promotions of other people, in their perspectives on the martial arts changing. And
sure,
that's what I'm struggling with. How do you reconcile someone you respected and almost revered with
it's kind of easy. If they lower their standards, I don't respect them as much. Isn't it that simple?
No, it's not. Because there are people all over the place, especially in our little Southern Ontario group here, and Lenny and Darren can speak to Ireland, where I've watched people absolutely chip away at their standards, their own standards, and yet still be respected, and I'll go so far as to say revered. I don't understand it.
This is where I have to bow out and say I neither want nor am part of that fucking thing, and anybody who is...
But you've seen it.
I see it all the time. It's reprehensible. I turn away in disgust at it, but... what is there to say beyond that?
I'm trying to understand the psychology behind people who continue to ride the coattails and follow blindly behind these individuals who betray those things in the martial arts.
I think riding the coattails is the precise phrase that succinctly puts the squarely in the face the problem.
Claude,
I'm having fun listening to you two, actually.
That's why we invited you on the podcast, so you could have fun listening to people. Say something.
I take it that I've trained with somebody that revered himself, and there was no other dojos in the area. I trained there probably far too long. I'm sorry I'm sounding like Bob because I've trained different places, but most of them were karate. It can be really, really challenging when you don't respect the person that's running the class, but you still go and train. And to this day, I don't know why I trained there as long as I did. I think I was there more for all of the other students. It is a hard one. And I think everybody, I never went because I was trying to ride his coattails. I think I feel sorry for any martial artist that follows somebody that they revere, that everybody else thinks has turned into a bit of an idiot. I don't know what that speaks of the character of the people that are following.
My thing is, most people don't think that these people have turned into a bit of an idiot. I seem to be the only one who thinks this. Like, this is my issue. When you've got somebody who's very high up in whatever martial arts organization you happen to be associated with, and most people seem to flock to them almost out of a blind allegiance. Okay, I'm going to relate a story. I'll keep it as generic as possible. A couple of years ago, I attended a black belt grading, and there was probably 15 or 20 black belts on the grading board, and probably 25, maybe, people who are testing to various levels of black belt. And I'm relating the story as an example of exactly what I'm talking about. So I really want to get everybody's input on this. The grading was going on. It was remarkably sad. There was no expectation of anything. There were people who were going from brown to black and people who were going from fifth to sixth, and they were all grading together. And there was literally no expectation of ability or effort. And I was being very vocal about my distaste for what I was watching. And a higher level black belt sitting next to me, I remember this vividly, they were doing sidekicks. And I was disgusted. I couldn't even. And there was a very high level black belt sitting next to me. And he leaned over and he said, "Will you shut up, please?" And my response was, and I probably said this louder than I should have, but I said, "Look, if you can show me one person out there who's doing a decent sidekick, I'll shut up." And it was met with silence because there wasn't one person out there doing a decent sidekick. And here's the irony. After the grading was over, I had three individuals, two of the black belts who were on the grading board and one of the black belts who was being graded, came up to me individually and said, "Look, I absolutely agree with everything you said. This was a farce. I can't even believe it." And two of those three people posted on the Facebook page about the grading, about what a great grading it was. And this is the contradiction I don't understand. Why is poor performance and poor expectation applauded as something good? And why are people so unwilling to stand up and say that was a bad thing?
It's the difference between what goes on inside your own head and what you're willing to say in public.
But why are people...
That's what it's about. It's not about technique or anything.
Fair enough, but why are people so unwilling to say it? That's what I'm trying to get at.
Mitch, you are completely black and white. And people always know where you stand. I don't take away from those people for agreeing with you. What I disagree with them is the contradiction. They can't say on the one hand that, yes, they see your points and it was terrible, and then post on Facebook that they did great. If they didn't want to be a hypocrite, they would have been better to just say nothing at all, because human nature is people do like to kiss ass sometimes instead of saying what they think.
But isn't that directly oppositional to what we're supposed to be doing in the martial arts, especially as caretakers, especially
integrity.
As
integrity.
Exactly, integrity. Aren't we supposed to have some of that?
I think it's politics. And you haven't done a podcast on politics, but you get 10 people in a room and give it a few months, a few weeks, and it becomes political. There's a hierarchy, and people want to get to that hierarchy or keep the hierarchy happy. And that's what these rankings turn into. There is a hierarchy and a lower-archy.
Integrity equals speaking your inside mind to outside people.
And most people don't.
The point is, why? What's the problem with stepping up and saying this is not right
thinking? Or there shouldn't be a problem. There shouldn't be a problem.
People don't like me.
Shouldn't be.
Then why do so few people do it?
Because you've been indoctrinated since time began that you don't challenge the higher rank.
Man, I really hope it's more complex than that, because that would
so
be
do
really
I. But let's face it, how many of us would in our days gone by have say being a brown belt, you see a guy up there who's just full of his own self-importance and he's wearing so many red tips around a belt that doesn't fit him because he's morbidly obese.
Fair enough, dude. Fair enough. That's brown belt. We're talking.
But even okay, you get to first degree, second degree. There's a guy sitting there with fifth degree, sixth degree. Are you going to challenge him? Most of the time, we wouldn't.
Yes.
Yes, but look, I understand that as a Q belt or a low level black belt, you're not gonna step up and do that. Okay, but I'm talking people of equitable rank. Once you get fifth, sixth, speak your mind, man. Like, have some balls and stand
absolutely
up and say,
I agree.
This is not right.
Absolutely, but for the most part, it doesn't, because we've been indoctrinated in that way of thinking.
Oh.
You respect, you bow to the higher grade. It's been the way.
That's a sad commentary on humanity.
No, it is, but it's sadly predominantly the way people are.
Look, we're not talking about the way things are. We're trying to talk about the way things should be, right?
No, I'm trying to talk about why things are the way they are. Mm. Rick, I'm really curious about your thoughts on this.
Don't want to rock the boat, so I won't say anything.
No, that's the root of the problem. Nice.
That about sums it up, Mitch.
Yeah, I guess I'm rocking the boat enough for both of us.
No. Yeah, well, true. But the thing is, that's why people don't say anything. They don't want to rock the boat, so they don't say anything.
Yeah, but don't people get that rock... I'm fine. Mm-hmm. I'm fine. Easy. Darren,
no, not on that.
Anything?
No. Nothing, no.
Okay. All right. Fair enough. Okay, guys. I've kind of covered everything I want to cover. I'm not sure there's anything else that anybody wants to talk about. I'm left feeling pretty empty and disappointed. I don't feel... I don't know. I'm sadly disappointed that there are so few people. Like, I don't understand why it's so okay for people to applaud wrong thinking, and why it's so not okay for people to stand up and go,
that's wrong thinking. It still has to be a subjective thing.
Here's a point to that. We have not named names here, and there was a reason why. Why haven't we named names?
I'll tell you why I don't name names. I don't think this problem is about any one person. I think this problem is universal, and I don't think there's any value in pointing out one person when there's 1,000 people who are responsible for this.
Without naming names, nobody will think it applies.
Doesn't matter.
Another thing is what you said, Mitch, was wrong thinking, and you're speaking from yourself. Why don't people speak out more about wrong thinking when it's wrong thinking? Well, that still is a very subjective thing. You may think something is wrong, and I may think it's semi-okay, and Darren may think it's absolutely great. The same thing.
Okay, fair enough. And that's just different perspectives. But at that grading, there were three other people who thought what I thought. Why didn't they stand up and say something? Okay, guys, let's go once around the table. Let's put this to bed. I'm feeling very sad and Claude, what do you think? Anything to say to wrap all this up?
I just revere you so much, Mitch. Oh, I'm sorry, that was
Well, can you blame him?
No, I yes! From the very beginning of this podcast, the word reverence just strikes me the wrong way. It's respect and how you earn your respect in the martial arts. It's been an interesting podcast. My brain doesn't hurt quite as much anymore, but I can't think of anything else to say, so I'll move on.
Rick, last comments.
Almost echoing what Claude said, I think.
Well, you revere Mitch too?
No. I don't revere Mitch at all. I respect Mitch. But it's not revere, it's respect. And it's respect you earn and respect you get from being years in the martial arts. And sometimes people don't say things they should because they do respect the person. But it's also, you know, that's just the way it is in life, too. I mean, you sometimes don't say what you should, but and that's when shit happens and things go wrong.
Lenny.
I sat down this evening at the start of this, and I mean, we all kind of said tongue in cheek, we were having a pop with you over how deep the conversation was, but as we've gone into it, it's left me in an absolute head melt, because I was entrenched in one way of thinking of, you know, the whole caretaker thing, and you don't revere people that are negative and so on. And just comments that Claude made and Darren made as the night went on, I realized that, Jesus, I have deviated so much from what my own perspectives were in the first place, that now I'm in... It's like what Claude says, when you practice so many different styles, which one are you loyal to the most and which one are you the caretaker of? And I'm not really, because the last few years I've spent more time exploring other styles than my own style. So it makes me question my own standpoint on things. On the reverence thing...
We should, dude.
Yeah, absolutely, yeah. The day I suppose you settle for one thing is the day you get complacent, and I suppose you might let standards slip. But just on the last point we were touching on, you're talking about people that you felt you should have called out on grades, and it opened up a whole thought process of stuff that's come into my own martial arts journey in years gone by, when I walked away from the political bullshit that came with it, and the egotists and the people I looked at in front who were judging me, and I thought, you are an absolute asshole, how dare you stand and judge me, which probably sounds like a very vain thing, but given the circumstances, it made me, you know, rethink the whole thing. So I've gone away from the whole thing. You're saying you're sad and whatever, Mitch. I've gone away from the whole thing now confused.
Lenny finds himself vaguely confused.
I'm now wandering in the wilderness.
Okay, Darren, last comments.
Topics that we were discussing and how that was expanded on, just the general topic, as you said, who watches the watchers. Like, I think that's something to take into consideration, because if you talk about who is the caretaker and who's the veteran and who's passing it on and who's passing what on, and where is the standards that are being passed on, and who's kind of watching that. So yes, you might have been trained for 100 years and you're okay, so as you said, that last grading you were at, you were dissatisfied. Somebody in there was satisfied and passed them. So who's watching that person to say, here, what are you doing? You're not a caretaker. You're not passing the appropriate stuff on. You're letting stuff slide. So you being on the panel, I'm assuming you're watching the watcher. So you're being there to watch this person that's doing that, to say, here, I got to hold you to the standards. I'm the caretaker. This is what we're doing. So it's like, who watches the watcher? You were actually there doing it, but that had no effect. The people still passed. It fell on deaf ears. And I think that's the greater topic, which is what you had there, is who watches that? Who's going to make sure that this shit's actually being passed on appropriately? Or is it just going to go off into fucking whatever, just complete chaos, and nobody's held accountable for anything?
That's kind of where we are.
Good point. It's a brilliant point, and Bob's right. And that's, I'm assuming, kind of that's where what we upset are, you on this whole thing. Is, you know what?
The whole reverence thing and all that sort of. So now actually, exactly, after the entire podcast, I agree with you.
Yes.
I started off. It only
took us 2 hours.
Here, you're taking this.
Are we all leaving
seriously? Let's just fucking go through the motion to do that. But when you get into the broader perspective, after 2 hours, I agree with you now. Fuck.
Bob, last comments.
We've made a distinction, an important distinction, between reverence and respect. I just need to say that I have neither for Mitch.
you motherfucker. I have no brother. Is that your last comment, Bob?
I think that said it all.
All right, fine. Yes. All right, folks. Really, right? Holy crap. Talk about invalidating my entire life. All right, folks. We're going to bring this one to a close. My final comments. I'm left feeling quite sad, frankly, and quite disillusioned, and much more unsatisfied than I usually feel at the end of podcasts. I'm not sure what accounts for that. I'm just going to leave it at that. It was a great conversation. Thank everybody. I am thanking everybody for coming on the podcast. Claude, good to have you back.
Hello, great to be back.
Hey, Claude.
And everybody, thanks for coming on, as always. Any comments, questions, please post them to my personal Facebook page, the No Mind Podcast Facebook page, or feel free to send me an email at nomindpodcast2021@gmail.com. I'm going to go cry into my pillow. Thanks, folks. We're done and we're out. Thanks so much, everybody.
Can you repeat that? Sorry, I know it was. Sorry, man.